welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. I do believe today would be 17th of April. 17th of April. Sannyasi, thank you for the ride. Yeah, I got to work on time on a spaceship today. That was good. That's really good, actually, because I'm glad she gave me this ride. You know, that was important to me to get here on time. I spent last night in the Pleiades, obviously. Yeah. Well, tonight we're going to, obviously, continue on with the show from last week. The show of April 9th or so. April 10th, April 9th, I don't know. The year is 2006, for those of you that aren't quite sure what year it is. Last week we talked about, I have to correct myself. The nearest star is Proxima Centauri, is 4.5 light years, not 6.5 light years, which I think is Alpha Centauri. Got them wrong. Got to correct that stuff, you know. Make adjustments here and there. That's what we do. We make adjustments. Lots of adjustments are made. Yeah. Well, tonight, Saturday night was fun. We had a question and answer. We had one caller call in. I'm not going to do any more of those question and answers because I don't get enough callers. I don't think I have any listeners anymore. And it scares me when nobody calls in. I was scared to death. Luckily, I had Scott call from Iowa. No, Ohio. Now, thanks for calling in, Scott. I know that you're out there tonight because you're one of my 14 listeners. I think I'm back up to 14. I think I dropped to about 7. I think the peak of my show was 65. And now we're back to, I have to reach over here and get a pyramid on my head that takes me away from the microphone for a minute so my voice will fade down a little bit. But anyway, I got a microphone out here now. Okay. And I got a pyramid on my head, power dome. Otherwise, I forget what I'm here for. Last week we talked about propulsion systems a little bit. We didn't get very far. Talk about the Black Hole effect, gravity, G-fields, some systems, the mandala of the irradiator system and how that works. And this week we're going to go a little further. First, I want to thank all my new listener out there. Notice I say new listener. That's really good when you have a new listener. I heard I had a new one. And thank that new listener for their undivided attention. I want to talk about lasers a little bit first, a little bit more, how they work in the systems and how they work with space and time travel. Last week I had described a circular system, which is in my book, that Alan Holt and I had worked on. Mostly was Alan Holt's design. Some of the ideas came from me, but he wrote the paper, and it was a NASA-written paper, and it's in the book there somewhere. And we talked about lasers. We were talking, we had described a round wheel, like the tire, where the tire would be, and then there's spokes, and there's 12 spokes, and we're shooting lasers down the spokes. And we've got a plasma field moving around the tire, two of them. We got one with a magnetic metal and another which is a non-magnetic metal. And what we're doing there is we're actually creating with a series of oscillators a bunch of like toroidal magnets. Actually, they're not toroidal. They're toroidal wound, but they're caduceus wound. A caduceus winding is when you create a field. If you want to wind a caduceus coil, here's how you do it. Get yourself a good old healthy toilet paper roll with the toilet paper removed. Take about a 5-foot piece of wire and put the toilet paper roll gently in a vise, maybe a broom handle or something in the center so it doesn't collapse on you. Open the wire up at 2.5 feet, bring that towards your face, and wrap it around and cross your hands so you get one wrap around. You've made one half turn around you, east to west, north and south, however you're facing. And then you bring it back around the backside, and you wrap around again, you make another turn, and you come back around to the front. And each time the wires come across, you cross the wire. You actually make an X out of it. So you end up with a series of X's on the front side of the toilet paper roll and a series of X's on the back side of the toilet paper roll. And this is some of the tricks of the design of the some of the devices that I'm working on now that gets rid of the effects of ELF and electromagnetic energies and other kinds of interference, which I've been doing through the Star Orbs, but I'm taking it to another level now. I've got another invention in mind here, which I'll probably come out with fairly soon, which will be quite interesting. It's a null zone generator. And that's kind of how the cancel column works and the time machine, and it also works in the spaceship. And if you remember last week when we were talking, we had mentioned that you would take a picture in space and time of where you are. And then you would take a picture of space and time where you want to be. And the wannabe picture the Pleiadians had developed over a period of time because they had mapped out by using a regular motive force, like the equivalent of an ion drive, they had mapped out space and time for one light year. So their first jump was one light year. And what they did is they programmed this energy, the photographs, basically. Just imagine taking a picture of where they wanted to be. And, of course, they already know where they are, so they're optically looking at themselves where they are. They're sending this energy inside of the spaceship down through the cancel column, which is in the center of it, with all these kind of coil-like things we've just described with oscillators. And it comes into a mixing chamber. And in the mixing chamber, if you remember, I said we have something like the X1 healing machine in there. And what that machine is going to do, it's going to project. It's now going to use a projector. It has seven different sets of lenses on it, seven different forms of radiation and energy and sound and gamma rays, every kind of radiation you would want to name and then some you wouldn't know. And it projects an image of where it wants to be into this projector. Now realize that there's already an image reflecting down in there where it is. So what it starts to do is it starts to dim the intensity of the picture that's on the sphere in the center of the ship and where it is, and it starts to blend this new image in simultaneously as the other image goes out. Now realize it's an energy image, not just a silver nitrate photograph or a digital photograph. Digital photography, by the way, is getting closer to that possibility. So the X1 is designed at this point to project this image, all of its seven levels of projection, which creates billions of colors if you want to be color-wise, like computers do, but it does a lot more. Then what happens is this projection is projected back out of the chamber of the new image of where it wants to be, sent back up the cancel column, sent to the spider optics in the center of the ship if it has one of those type of ships. And if it doesn't, it goes to these projectors. In the case of a beam ship, like the number 4, beam ship variation 4, if you look at that great big giant thing on the top of the ship, in a lot of the pictures that Billy Myers took and others took, and I think it might even be a drawing or so of one of those in the book here, that is a beam projector, and it projects the beam out of where it wants to be. And as soon as that happens, it's there. So time-wise, this whole photographic process really doesn't take much time. The amount of time is the blending energy and the projection energy. But this beam in its totality, I think page 463 is a very good picture of the beam projectors. The older variation ships, the variation 3s, had a more archaic projector system where they had a projector on the top, and they had a projector on the bottom, and they were subjected to a lot of field leakage, leakage of equivalent of radiation and other kinds of thing, optical leaks. It didn't work very well for them. I developed a prototype engine. I don't know if there's any pictures of it in here. There probably isn't of this, one of the old Variation 4s, because my first ship that Semyonov gave me the design to was a Variation 3. I'll take that back. Oh, and by the way, I've got and we also talked about the hull of the ship and the magnetic resonance and the energy resonance. The whole hull resonates with all these frequencies. It's not just quite as simple as I've explained it, but basically it's taking a picture and photographing it and beaming it into a place and beaming it out, and you're in the picture. You get the picture? I mentioned last week about mushrooms, taking a cross-section of a mushroom, and they work in energy just like a seashell does with making the sounds of the ocean. The energy coming from a mushroom is such that these little chambers in it are very much like optical chambers or chambers of energy of the universe. The mushroom is a depiction of that, and so when it is ingested, the psilocybin aspect of a mushroom is ingested in the human system, it rearranges, it patternizes serotonin in such a manner that it breaks away its continuity. The continuity of serotonin is broken away from the human psyche, and therefore you are able to have an experience of what you might perceive somewhere else in the universe to be, or where you could go. So, this is kind of fun stuff. However, I got to caution you on something. I know some of you will say, okay, now I've got a Systems 3. Let's take some mushrooms and go in the system and really enhance it. Well, be very careful when you do that, because you're able to do things on mushrooms with a lot more perception than you normally would be in our systems. And you might find yourself getting out a little too far and having a bit of a problem getting back. I've seen that happen. I've seen people never come back. I could actually name some. They usually assume a idealistic personality, maybe from a past life, but once they've done this multiple exposure through our increased organics, I've seen them physically, personality change and never to be the same again. Never seen it really damaging to them, to their DNA, but I have seen a complete rearrangement of DNA in one of our systems. Systems 3 is primarily where I've seen it, to the point where the person assumes another personality and another identity permanently. Not split, but a permanent identity. And I wouldn't call it a crisis, because this one person that had this happen is out there. He calls himself Maitreya, and he calls himself all kinds of different names now. He's got, you know, he went out and he just became a Buddha, kind of a Buddha energy. He got the Systems 3, he did all this. This was in Hawaii. I mentioned him last week. His first name was Ron. And some of you might know him, but he rearranged himself, his DNA-wise, over in Hawaii. He actually attracted the Dalai Lama, and I think it's like the movie The Fly. I think that with the Dalai Lama in the system, with him, and I don't know if he was on psychedelics the day the Dalai Lama was there, but I'm sure they weren't far away, he absorbed part of the personality of the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama didn't seem to mind it. Took him to India for a year. And then Ron came back wearing orange robes. He left wearing a suit and came back wearing actually white robes, white flannel stuff, guru stuff, and proceeded to start organizing ashrams. He was very successful even today with his ashrams. But it all started after a normal person by the name of Ron went to Hawaii in the early 80s and set up a system and did a few things in the system, and invoked the Dalai Lama, who physically came, and took him back to India. And he's been in India a lot, and he's got ashrams in Northern California, and he's copied some of my products. He makes them you see them on the internet, things that have strange intonations of what I do. But that was just one case. There's been several. I remember the Lama Rinpoche was one of the first ones that went through a change without a system. And some of these, you know, the way a Dalai Lama works is that he is reincarnated, and after he leaves, usually within a year, into some village in, used to be Tibet when they had control of it. And when they reincarnates, he's like a one-year-old kid, and he remembers intuitively that he was something before, And he acts real strange, and the villagers soon contact the lamasery because they better. And then the monks come down and they examine this child, usually bringing artifacts of the deceased Dalai Lama. They examine the child, and the child will say, well, that was my teacup, and that wasn't, and that was my cane, and that was my hat, and that wasn't. And the child gets pretty much 100% nailing of what he had in artifacts, and he's only a year old, maybe two at the most. And go back to the lamasery he goes, and our Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso, the Gyatso clan, he says that he knows he's a 14th Dalai Lama, but doesn't remember anything about number 13, so it's kind of cute. He's very honest about it. So you don't get a complete memory, but you get enough to be placed back in and get the work doing. So with that rhetoric going, and Ron meeting and the system, and it was really an interesting homogenization of energies. And the reason I brought up Lama Rinpoche was he was one of the first ones that did that in the 60s, except instead of reincarnating in Tibet, he was reincarnated in America. And one morning as an engineer, a young engineer, he woke up and realized he was somebody else. Just walked away from the job and became a Lama. So that was kind of interesting. You see this stuff, and the system certainly amplify that. They take you to places that you normally might not go. Maybe if the Earth was not in a mess it's in with all the different energies that are alien to the body, which is about every one there is, I would assume that the Earth would be a better place to live and we wouldn't have this phenomena so noticeable. So like I say, be careful with psychedelics in our systems. Word of caution. You might like the result, but your friends, your wife, your children, they might not know you anymore. Believe me, that's true. So, anyway, now let's go back before I go too far in this propulsion and time travel. I want to go over and look at the X1 healing machine. If you look at the chapter 37, is where we start to look at some of this energy, and then chapter 38 really nails it right on. You'll see that the healing machine looks like a banana, a big, tall banana. And it has seven different transmitting tubes on it, which, in effect, act like a System 3, with the exception of that they're all in one column. It can do the entire thing that a System 3 does in one position. However, you do have to place some of the sound equipment. It produces a holographic sound, which is surround sound. But the way the prototype is looking now, which won't be exactly like this one, it will be able to project that sound around you and then whirl it around you. So if you're sitting, imagine yourself sitting in a chair and somebody is ringing a bell, a handheld bell, and they walk around you 360 degrees, you can hear the position of where that bell is. So that's what the sound unit does. And you can speed up that circular rotation of sound going around you, or you can slow it down. Either one, it doesn't really matter. Secondly, it is each tube. There are seven major colors of tubes. And if you look over on page 371, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light, a book I wrote in case you're new, you will see the different anodes, and you'll see a dye laser in there. And the reason we're using a dye laser is because it's what's called tunable lasers. As a matter of fact, tunable lasers is a big article right now, just came out on the front page of May 2006, Popular Science. And also, if the Newsom brothers decide to post my latest thing, I've sent a video in to go onto my website, onto my BBS radio website, that shows in operation a weapon system from the Army, a laser, shooting a cannon projectile shell right out of the sky. That's the negative side of the technology. Using a very similar system, as I'm showing on this page 371, except we're not using it as a weapon. What we're doing is using it as a healing device. And you'll see the design of the tube And the drawings in Popular Science are incredibly similar, except this book came out in 1999, and they just invented this new system in the last 24 months. So that ought to tell you something. So we were there first. Anyway, what we do is and last week we were talking, and actually Saturday night, you want to get the Saturday night show to get all the details, because I talked about the seven levels of consciousness through the colors, through the chakras, through the endocrine system, through the hormone structure. It's all on the Saturday night show, which would have been the April 15th, 2006 show that you want to reference for this. We talked about the energies of every single color in the sound spectrum and how they work on the cellular structure of the body. Let's say, for example, that we're going to use this X1 healing machine to allow you to heal yourself, okay? Just as it can create all of the radiations inside of a Pleiadian ship in the mixing chamber, in the optical chamber that's in the core of the ship, the heart of the ship, it can also obviously mock up all DNA frequencies, because it has to. If you're going to create an event that is so spectacular that you're actually going to be projected into it. In other words, here is a projector that will project the thing on the wall, and you can just walk into the image on the wall, look at it that way, in a spaceship. Then obviously we can go into the human body, where the principles all lie anyway, and create an energy field in the human body that will address any kind of a cellular situation in any sort form of array or disarray. And that's what the X1 system does. I've just, financially, it's people don't realize how many, many, many millions of dollars I have spent, developing the things that we have now. Nobody came along and handed me a checkbook and said, here, we'll go invent something. Every dime that I earned in this company for the last 31 years went back into research of one sort or another. And the X1 healing machine is looking at a minimum of $250,000 of cash infusion to finish. And more like $1,500,000 would be really get a really splendid model. I even have Sony Corporation willing to work on the tubes and that, the projection screens now with the new technology that we have with the flat screens. When the time is right, they've been waiting for me for a while, but I have to get it together on my end more to do this. So, if you look at page 372, you'll see that Caduceus coil that we were winding around the toilet paper roll wound around this screen, this projector. Now, that is only a rough drawing. In reality, there is an infinite number of intersections. Here we're showing like the intersections on the top of the tube, and you would assume, obviously, if they're on the top, they have to be on the bottom. The wires have to come back 180 degrees and wrap around themselves to make this pattern. But in fact, this pattern would be much more dense. It would be on the sides going over and the middle and the halfway around everywhere. So the whole thing would be set up in that form of energy field. Caduceus fields, we call them. So anyway, that is the beginning of the healing machine. Now what happens is, let's say that, and you realize this, you got to heal yourself. Let's say you have a broken arm. Okay, that's a serious problem, I would think, a piece of bone that's broken and skin that's broken. Two things would happen with the healing machine. Number one, you would sit in front of it, and while you're sitting in front of it, it would go to red. And what we would ask you to do is say, what color are you seeing up there on red? Let me backtrack. Each one of these seven different tubes or projector screens, okay, has seven subcolors in it. So if you're looking at one of the screens, there'd be the tube at the top would be red. And then imagine if you don't have the book, just the seven flat screen television sets stacked on top of each other in a banana kind of an arc. Just imagine that, how that would look. Seven television sets, each one with a red through violet screen. And the red screen could switch from bright red to almost orange red. The screen below it could go orange red to almost yellow red, and on down to green and all through to blue and then to violet. So it would go kind of like that, so you get an idea of what it's about. We would have you look at probably about a 670 nanometer wavelength red, which would be a good, very bright red. It's getting up there in the reds. It's very red. Now, let's say you would look at that red and you're colorblind, and you're saying to yourself, "Well, I don't see red. I see looks more like orange." Well, that's okay, because what we have, while you're looking at this, we have your hand placed in a little box. And that little box has a high-voltage Corellian recording camera system built into it. And so we know that you should be looking at 672 nanometers, and that your hand should also show on its aura field a corresponding biofeedback Corellian energy in correlation to that 672 nanometers. But if you're colorblind, your hand is going to create, your body is going to create a phase shift, and we're going to be able to see how many nanometers, you know, this is a unit of wave, how fast the wavelength is, how many cycles per second you're off phase, because you're out of phase if you're seeing orange, and it's going to show up. So before we do any healing, what we're going to have to do is fix that. At phase, there's going to have to be a phase correction. Then what we do is we go from the top seven reds into the next colors all the way down to the violets, observing all of your phase peculiarities, and you'll have several. You might be down in a dark blue, and you're looking at calling it violet. We call violet 402 nanometers, and you might be looking at interpreting it at 442 nanometers, which is a dark kind of a violet blue, but it's not correct. So we're going to record all of those things into this computer, all these changes. Then what we're going to do is we're going to create sounds. We're going to start out with A at 440 cycles per second, which is A. And we're going to go all the way through the sounds. And then we're going to notice, how are you tone deaf? You might be hearing at 440, you might be hearing, you might sound to you a little bit sharp. You know, it may sound high, but it's normal. And you might be hearing it at 398, and it should be 440. And all the way down to about 100 hertz, the lower notes. And you'll where you actually feel the sound. So we're going to record that. Then we're going to do the equivalent of an MRI. We're going to put a magnetically polarized field. We're going to sweep your body with a magnetic field. Then we're going to look at that character, the characterization of the magnetic field. So those three measurements alone give us a wealth of data. Before we ever get to the healing of the bone in the broken arm, we're going to have a complete readout on all your peculiarities, which is going to tell us why you broke your arm in the first place. Because in order to heal it, we need to know why you broke it. And we're going to see the phase changes. We're going to see the color separations that are not incorrect. The interpretations of sound, light, color, and magnetism. We're going to read that in your whole body. So then we're going to understand why you had this problem. Usually an accident, because that would probably be an accident, is created when you're slightly out of phase with your energy over time. Now, I say over time, meaning that you're running a little too fast for your perceptive powers, and you run into an obstacle. And that obstacle probably has more density than you do, and something, either obstacle's got to move, or you're going to break. Something's going to break. Something's got to absorb the impact. In this case, it was your arm. So, what we can do now with the X1, now that we got this reading, we can go back and identify your field, your energy field, as it was just before you broke your arm. That's what we're going to be able to go to. That's our program. So now, what happens is that we put the arm into the beam, or you into the beam, and we basically take you back in time to the point before your arm broke. At that moment, we shut the machine down, and the arm no longer is broken because it never got broken in the first place. It's been time-correlated, corrected, TCC, baby. And that's how the X1 healing machine works. And that's, and I don't know if you ever saw The Day the Earth Stood Still. That was a good movie. And if you remember, when the robot, the guy that was the pilot of the spaceship, who was a friendly guy, some army guy that was surrounding the spaceship accidentally shot him because he got a little overamped. And so they had to take him, he got killed, and so the robot took the alien, which was a humanoid, back inside the spaceship, disengaged part of the propulsion system, and brought him back to life again, pretty much. And that's what we're doing here. But we're not raising the dead. I don't plan to go into working with somebody that died and bringing them back, because that's not a very good thing to do, and I've never done it anyway, and I don't plan to do it now. And everything's possible, but it's not where I'm going with this. And so we just go back in time to the point with your body, with the vibration. We map it back. It's called reverse mapping. We map your DNA back. We run your vibrations, all your frequencies back. And you go back. And you go back to that point. And what is your reality? I mean, your reality is you're still here in this present time. But temporarily, while this system is doing what it's doing, you're not here. It's, you're gone. And that's kind of the neat effect. And that, by the way, in its simpler form, is how the System 3 works. It doesn't have the intensity of the plasmic volume of energy, because we're talking a pure plasma of force here now, a brute force of energy. It won't produce that unless you want it to. And if you want to do stuff like that in a Systems 3, then you need to increase the plasmic ethereal velocity of your aura. And the only one way I know of that you can do that is called fire breathing. And I've been doing this for most of my life, fire breathing. That's when you get inside the system and you sit down and you breathe through your diaphragm. You know, breathe in, out, in, out, and you go very fast, for 1,000 fire breaths. That's a good place to start. And you get up to 10,000. And when you get up to 10,000, your body will be so supercharged with pranic energy that you'll be totally amazed at what you can do in one of those systems. Levitation is probably at 5,000 fire breaths. You're flying already. You're off the ground. You can do anything you want. There's no limitation. The same thing with the X1 healing machine. It will do some amazing things. Of course, it eliminates fire breath, but it won't be marketed that way. It won't be sold that way. It will just do that. And that's what these kind of machines do. It's called Pleiadian technology. The X1 healing machine not only will bring you back in time for your arm repair, and it could be any organ in your body. It could be a fatal disease. Doesn't really matter what it is. And by the way, the machine's not healing you. You're still doing it yourself, but the machine is at least allowing you to backtrack in time and space to where the event was on the event horizon. Remember, we talked about event horizons 2 or 3 shows back. Go back to the archives and pick those up. It takes you into your own personal event horizon where you had a failure. Ooh, I hate that word, failure. That's a scary word. Really, really doesn't agree with my psyche. Failure. I like success. Success is a very nice word. Excellent word. I hope you're all following along tonight. As I said very early on, I think maybe back in January or December, that we would be getting more into the book and what's in the book. And I'm keeping my word. I mean, you might not get the timing exactly as I have meant it to be. I usually don't get my own timing correct. But I knew there would come a time when we needed to go into this book and educate you, because if I'm going to do the next book, The Inside Track, we better understand this one first. The next book won't have all these pictures in it. It will require some knowledge and understanding of what we do for some interpretation. The next book, of course, will be more simpler. It's going to reach a larger audience. And so it will be a simpler book. Another thing that you might look at is on page 379, the Niels Bohr orbit. Here we're mapping out the hydrogen atom. And I think that's important because your body is oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. And while we've been talking about rearranging the DNA structure, we're also rearranging the cellular structure. We're also arranging the atomic structure and beyond. I mean, when I say beyond, if you look at the Niels Bohr orbit where I'm talking about valence rings, how many electrons completes a shell on an atom, okay? The proton is obviously the nucleus, 1,645 times heavier than the electron, spinning at some slightly less than light speed around the nucleus. If it's one electron spinning around there, we're going to call it hydrogen. To make that orbit complete, orbit number one, or energy level number one, we need two electrons. We have the second one, we have helium. The next level out wants to see eight, and oxygen has six. So it wants two more. It wants them bad. It's a high valence. It wants that attraction. So it'll grab two hydrogen atoms that are sitting out there with single electrons, and so you have H2O, which is an eight. Water, and so on. Well, when we deal with the X1 healing machine, we are playing around, obviously, with hydrogen, and we are going into those orbits, and we're stopping them. We actually temporarily stop those rotational electrons and let them dance. When they dance, they release subatomic particles like leptons and hadrons and quarks and all those things. And the X1 healing machine, because of its resonant, deep resonant superstructure, or architecture, we could call it, what it does is it goes in there and allows the body, by controlling these things on those levels, to rearrange itself. And therefore, the bone can be healed instantaneously. And I'm only using it because I think that broken bones or calcium parts of the body, dense parts of the body, make a dramatic demonstration of what this technology is capable of. In the case of a tumor, for example, that would be malignant, we would just take the body organ back to the point where the tumor didn't exist and seal it right there. And, of course, the tumor. Now, at the same time, what if a person... remember when Jesus raised Lazarus? Good story. Lazarus had died of cancer. It's an old disease, been around a while. He went in and he undid the cancer, very much like a walking X1. Jesus was like a walking X1 machine. He went in and he healed. He didn't heal, but he allowed Lazarus to get rid of, in time and space, the point that he got the cancer. In other words, he didn't have it anymore. So Lazarus woke up in a previous time and came out. That's why he called him and told him to wake up, come out. And he did. But after Jesus was crucified, then what happened was Lazarus went back to his own ways. And he did, because Jesus had not healed the cause of Lazarus' death, and 10 years later, Lazarus died the second time of cancer. Same disease, same place. So, same thing goes with the next one. If cancer is removed by this process, it doesn't mean that you won't get it again. Absolutely does not mean that. Chances are you will. But what it does do is give you a second shot at doing some changes in your life. Because human destiny is what it is, and the only way you can change it is to create a difference in the present. And that would mean, in the case of cancer, obviously anybody that's going to have cancer immediately has a pH problem in their body. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that disease. You have a pH in the acidic region, something below 8, okay? Probably well below 8, usually 5 or 6. And 5 or 6 is pretty likely to contact cancer or actually absorb a carcinogenic substance, which then creates a free radical, which then becomes cancer. Or if you get down in the 4.5 to 5, where a lot of people are, you're going to have it. You're going to get cancer. It's looking to happen in your body. So if you were healed of that, that was removed from your body, you would then have to turn around and start changing your diet around so that your pH, potential hydrogen factor of your body, changes. And the reason that we were saying pH, because we just talked about on page, it was 371 or whatever it was there. No, it wasn't 371. It was the Niels Bohr orbit, where I was just showing you a minute ago, in the case of energy, why that is so critical. Because the electron is going to be stopped. It's going to dance. It's going to shake out energy from other planes. And it's going to bring consciousness. Because remember, energy follows thought. And the thought process is very important if it's clear. So, in the process of explaining to you space-time and space travel and time travel, I'm trying to map with you, my beloved audience out there, well, minus one listener, plus I guess we got a new one, how this energy works. Now, cross-referencing the page on the Niels Bohr orbit, the electron, the proton, in the body, how it works. Cross-reference that page. Funny, now I can't even find it. My own book. That's how crazy I am. Cross-reference that page with page 345. 345, you are seeing a mandala of energy inside of systems 3. Okay, there is a mandala there. All right. You'll see that time zone 1 is the Muladhara chakra, the base chakra. It's a 4-petal lotus, and it creates 2 scalar wave vibrational transitions. 2 events in space and time occur between T1 and the neutral center of the middle, where all of the other irradiators are pointed. Then when we jump to time zone 2, we see an increase all the way around time zone 7, which will have 96, or if you're running it as a diamond, 960. If you're running it to do a basic healing on the body, you're going to have an amethyst in that chamber. If you're doing it to raise high frequency and do crazy stuff like we're talking about, you're going to have a diamond in that chamber. And that diamond in that chamber is going to create a 960-petaled lotus energy field across there, so it's going to be a lot more complex, and the other ones are going to be higher density, except T1. T1 will always be a low frequency. You have to have a ground, so you always leave T1 alone. T1 is a ground. Actually, I got the colors backwards. T1 would be, in this situation I'm showing, T1, T2 is reverse time, which is grounding. Switch that 180 and make T1 and T2 where T7 is, and make it go that way. Actually, make T7 T1, and then T2 will be T6. Reverse it, or look through the page backwards, which is easier. And I'm showing it as a transcendental clockwise position. but in fact, you'd want to run it backwards from what I have on the show, on the page here. And that's important to understand when you start working with these systems. Now, as I said earlier, decrease the density of the plasma, you need to do fire breathing, unless you have a T1. Oh, by the way, it was page 379 is the Niels Bohr orbit. If you take page 379 and were to superimpose it on the drawing on page 345, where you have the seven irradiators, each one of those orbits out from the hydrogen atom corresponds to the field of one of these irradiators that is set up with the proper materials in the bottom of it, which would correlate to that color. So you'd use amethyst, ruby, those kinds of colors. And these would go in the mixing chambers. Okay. So this gives you a back and forth view of a micro-macro application. When you add the X1 healing machine, imagine it to now be the same thing as both these drawings superimposed, with, in this case, red being a T7 and violet on the bottom of the X1 healing machine being T1, base of the spine. And remember that the wavelength of red is about 675 to 680, almost 700 nanometers, which is a very short wavelength. And ultraviolet is down around 402 nanometers, much way slower. Also remember that butterflies, their synaptic rate is in the ultraviolet region, which takes you into spiritual worlds. Remember, at night you dream, astral plane, seventh, sixth level, versus infrared, where all these weapons are, that we talked about, like in Popular Science this month on the cover, or actually it's the May edition, it's out now, which is red, a very high frequency. Okay, so you could call anger up there if you wanted. It's also the will when it's not overdriven. Overdriven will is anger. Anytime you push your willpower, your consciousness of will, too hard, you become angry. It's a natural flight or fight syndrome. And fight syndrome is very common in humans. So anyway, at my seminar, I know a lot of you out there listening are coming in. Take note of all these shows that we're doing, because we'll have Dr. Deagle there who will further explain. He's very unique in the fact that he can explain things even better than I can. He understands exactly what I'm doing with the Pleiadian side of it. But remember, that's where I come from. And as a result, I'm not, on the terrestrial side, probably as grounded as I could be. That's my human trait weakness. I'm human. Obviously, I was born here, but I come from somewhere else. And I've been here before. And so with that knowledge, he can help out, because he's definitely a very intelligent, super bright terrestrial doctor. And he's versed not only in medical science, he's versed in chemistry, and he's one of the most smartest, most brilliant DNA specialists in the world. And he's also very, very versed in biochemistry as well, and physics. The man knows physics quite well. He's brilliant. And, of course, he's probably an ET too, but more advanced than me. I don't know where he, maybe he's an Andromedan or something. I'm just a lowly Pleiadian, which I don't mind, because it works for me. It actually works for me. So anyway, we aren't going to get too much done. I told you it's going to take two or three sessions to get this out, what I'm trying to do here. I just love to look through this book and talk into this microphone, because it's like the madman, I really want to get into the T700 more. That's the time travel transposer, which I actually built one of those, part of it. And it was really interesting. All the trees grew in circles around here. But I wanted to cover another area here real briefly. excuse me. I think we got enough time to cover it. It's called an ARV. My friend Mark McClandish got the drawings from it. Sannyasi gave me the design of this thing. This is was back in 1982 or 83. I think it was about 83 she gave me the design of this thing. This ARV. And it was built by the Army. And I actually met one of the pilots of it. It's on page 445. I've got pictures of it. I think even on my BBS radio website. But it's an alien reproduction vehicle. And a friend of mine flew it. And it has two F-16 seats. It was kind of interesting how they put it together because it was, how would I describe this? Built out of a bunch of parts. That would be the best way. And they didn't have in this particular craft, they didn't use like the LM-115 approach that they used in some of the others, which is another show, obviously. We hit it with slow neutrons that create gravity waves. Another deal, sort of like the George Ademski stuff. But anyway, there's so many different kinds of propulsion systems, I might add. So anyway, this little thing, I've seen it fly. The guys had to wear these horrible G-suits. And I've said this, I don't know if I've ever said this on BBS Radio. I've done an Art Bell show a lot. I remember, if you remember, several years ago, it was in Popular Science, Popular Mechanics magazine. There's an actual rat running around in an aquarium on the bottom because and it's a liquid, but it's kind of like Freon. It's not exactly Freon, but it's a liquid that carries oxygen, and that's what it was first developed for the Navy SEALs to dive at depths of 1,000 feet or more. Because the only way you can go down that deep with the outside pressure being tons per square inch, not pounds, but tons, and that would collapse your lungs, is to have your lungs fill of a liquid that would equalize the outside pressure. And then there's no pressure outside. And that was called a liquid diving suit. And basically what the SEAL has to do when he wears that is he has to drown, literally. You fill up your lungs with this liquid. You take a breathe it in. It burns like hell. And suddenly you're breathing inside this suit. I'll put a picture of one of these suits up on my website eventually or on the BBS radio site for you to see. And so anyway, you'll have this suit on, and you're breathing this stuff. Okay? Well, it's in the case of a SEAL, it's a mask. The whole body's not in the suit, but the head is, and they're breathing this liquid. And once you start, obviously, you keep breathing it. And then when you come out of the water, by the way, you have to discharge this from your lungs, and you cough and choke, and your eyes turn red, and it's horrible. Well, these astronauts had to fly a ship, but they had to be inside the liquid to handle, because this particular ARV has an ability to move sideways at 33 Gs, 33 times your normal weight. So if you're a 200-pounder, multiply that times 33, and you're pretty damn heavy. You'd be crushed. So you have to be in a special, what they call, zero-G suits. And one of my friends flew that in this thing, and it was pretty interesting. What I liked about it, though, is when we were talking about the block wall and the G-fields, this is it's the most clever little block wall field generator. They call it a flux liner. I think it is so cool. It's not that hard to build one of these. And if you look at page 447 in the book, and by the way, it's an old plutonium ship. A lot of these, and all they need the plutonium for is to create a magnetic flux, which they have to obviously create, use amounts of electricity. And they send it into these plates that are in the bottom. And if you study the generator, the plates in the bottom, how it's laid out, there's a little bit of a column there that accelerates. That's part of the reactor and the control rods in the center, and it generates electricity directly. There's no spinning turbine. There's a direct plutonium to electrical circuit that they have, and it creates these different magnetic fields across these different plates on the bottom. And there's a series of plates. Looks like if you divided a pie up, you know, like an apple pie, or you cut it in slices, and you have many apple pies, and you cut many slices. Each slice would get a negative and positive charge, which would create a north and south field effect on this on the bottom of the ship. So this is a cargo space. For those of you who don't have my book, there's a cargo space above it, or a place where you would sit. And down below in the basement of this round little ship are these plates, these pie-shaped plates that go around in a circle. So imagine a bowl on top of about 5 apple pies. And all apple pies are sliced, and each slice gets a negative-positive charge at some point in time. Well, the beauty of that design was, and they have an oscillator that puts a plate here and turns a plate down over there and a plate down over there and a plate. So it creates a series of block walls and G-field effects that builds its own gravity. It's a very crude, very cool idea, and it works. And by controlling the polarity charge on these different plates, they can move the ship around. They can create the flux density higher on one side, meaning that we're putting a bigger charge. I'm running out of time here. Yeah, I have to explain the rest of this next week. Sorry. Just ran out of time. Well, the show's actually gone over. Sannyasi, get me out of here. I'll explain this next week. We'll get into the flux liner. Do your homework. Where is Sannyasi? I got to get out of here. She's coming now. Are you coming? The nick of time. My God. Almost explained the flux liner on dead airspace. Okay, I'm in the ship. I'm out of here. Bye. How are you doing, Sannyasi? Well, thanks for getting me out of that show. My God, I thought, you know, that show was never going to end. That was a lot of energy. Yeah, it was nice to see you again. Nice ship. Where are we going tonight? The drive-in? You want some fries? Sannyasi, wouldn't you just... Oh, you like French fries. That's right. We have to... I guess you don't want to go to McDonald's because... those French fries, they're animal fat. You want to go to a vegetable oil place. Bob's Big Boy, I think they're those French fries. Sannyasi, you got to stop eating those French fries. I mean, your 105 pounds will be 205 pounds. Can I drive the spaceship tonight? Please? Come on, let me drive it. Let me put my hand on the signature ring there. I want to make it hover a little bit. Please? Well, you don't have to push me against the wall. I'm not that bad a driver. Oh, my God. I just realized the microphone was still on. Excuse me while I turn the microphone off.
Read the most book of our generation, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light by Dr. Fred Bell. Bring energy and healing technologies into your life that have been kept secret for centuries. Exposed are highly classified research projects in use today at NASA and Area 51. The book is available on Dr. Bell's website, www.pyradyne.com. You'll also see more information about Dr. Bell's nuclear receptors, which allow our bodies to process all forms of electromagnetic and chemical toxins, assuring longer, healthier life. Call 1-800-729-2603 today.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.